Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Mana,
mana,
stambha,
stambha,
nimittanam,
nimittanam,
janmadinam,
janmadinam,
samantata,
samantata,
sarva,
sarva,
shreya,
shreya,
pratipanam,
pratipanam,
hanta,
hanta,
muhyena,
muhyena,
na,
na,
matpara,
matpara,
manastambha nimittanam,
manastambha nimittanam,
janmadinam samantata,
janmadinam samantata,
sarvashreyah pratipanam,
sarvashreyah pratipanam,
hantamuhyena matparaha,
hantamuhyena matparaha,
mana,
mana,
of false prestige.
False prestige.
Stambha.
Stambha.
Because of this impudence.
Because of this impudence.
Nimittanam.
Nimittanam.
Which are the causes?
Which are the causes?
Janma-adinam.
Janma-adinam.
Such as birth in a high family.
Such as birth in a high family.
Samantaha.
Samantaha.
Taken together.
Taken together.
Sarvashreya,
sarvashreya,
for the supreme benefit of life.
For the supreme benefit of life.
Pratipanam,
pratipanam,
which are impediments.
Which are impediments.
Hanta,
hanta,
also.
Also.
Muhyet,
muhyet,
becomes bewildered.
Becomes bewildered.
Na,
na,
not. Matparaha,
matparaha,
my pure devotee.
My pure devotee.
Although aristocratic birth and other such opulences are impediments to advancement in devotional service because they are causes of false prestige and pride, these opulences never disturb a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. Devotees like Dhruva Maharaj, who was given unlimited material opulences, have the special mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Once Kuvera wanted to give Dhruva Maharaj a benediction, but although Dhruva Maharaj could have asked him for any amount of material opulence, he instead begged Kuvera that he might continue his devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When a devotee is fixed in his devotional service, there is no need for the Lord to deprive him of his material opulences. The Supreme Personality of Godhead never takes away material opulences achieved because of devotional service, although he sometimes takes away opulence achieved by pious activities. He does this to make a devotee prideless or put him in a better position in devotional service. The special devotee is meant for preaching, but does not give up his family or material opulences to take to the service of the Lord. The Lord surely takes away his material opulences and establishes him in devotional service. Thus the pure devotee becomes fully engaged in propagating Krishna consciousness. So there's some distinction made here between the special mercy and the mercy of the Lord. The mercy of the Lord may be seen when he takes away material opulences, maybe take away some kind of situation that is creating pride. He gives a list here by the birth that we're coming from, our education, the position we're in, or our personal beauty, or some opulence is there. And because of that, then we may become proud. And so this is an obstacle to devotional service. So any of these, they'll always be a problem for devotional service because of this pride. So if there's the mercy of the Lord, it may disappear, these things. It may be taken away or reduced or in some way disturbed. But if the Lord's special mercy is there, that means the person is, even in that situation, is not disturbed by it. This is the point being made here. This is a fine point, because otherwise we might have a tendency to approach this that If the Lord is giving His mercy, He takes away your material opulence. If He's giving special mercy, then He gives you all material opulence. This may be a view on this point, that someone might see as Bali Maharaj had something, and he lost it because he was proud. Then he takes it away, and because he's not proud now, then Krishna gives it all back. So therefore, if I'm very careful in my devotional service and I'm not proud, then Krishna will give me so much opulence. So we see that's different, a different approach. Though the result, we see the situation is the same. Then, if we see that all opulences are an impediment, so the Lord's mercy is whether we are disturbed by these or not. If we are disturbed, so we won't be disturbed, Krishna takes them away. If we're not disturbed, He leaves them. Because there's no need to take them away. Because everything can be engaged in the Lord's service. Also a distinction is made here between results of pious activities and results of devotional service. This is a very important point. Prabhupada would very much make this distinction. Is that you have somebody that, due to their previous activities in previous lifetimes, or even in this lifetime, then a particular material result is there. They may be, you know, have any of these opulences. They may be very intelligent, they may be very wealthy, or very, you know, organized, something. They have some conditioned nature that is there, and it may be very good. So then, that Krishna may take away. But once Krishna is given an opulence because of devotional service, that's never taken away. We can see so many times devotees who are known in devotional service, after a long time, they're known for something. They're very expert at kirtan or some form of devotional service. It doesn't matter how many years they've been away from the movement, whatever nonsense they've done, you'll see that quality never goes. I've had so many devotees tell me this, that when they have these like reunions, these Prabhupada reunions of, you know, the old senior devotees. And whatever the devotee was excellent at before, means things that he wasn't good at, those go away. But what he was actually known for, specialized in, then we would see that when they would come back, I've heard so many devotees say it was as if they had never left. You know, somebody who they give lecture or their kirtan, or their different moods, their humility, or whatever it was, it didn't change. Because that was due to their service. But you see, other things come. They may be very wealthy, you know, they're doing so many things, then next they're, you know, just doing something very simple, they have no opulence. So, these things may come and go. Those things may come and go. And those are what are the impediments. The spiritual is not, because the mentality was right in that area, that opulence came. So therefore there's no need to remove it. Removal is only for the purpose of correction. So then, if if the mentality is not proper because of opulence, it becomes disturbed by that, because of our material desires. People are working for material desire. And when they get it, they become happy. When they become happy, many times they become proud. Because we identify with the body, the mind, the intelligence, we identify with the abilities that we get in these areas. So when they go nicely, then we become proud. Right? You know, it's like when somebody is doing something and it's happening, they become very proud. And it's kind of like, everyone, look, it's happening. You know? But why would anybody have to look? If it's always happening, it's just normal. No, because it's happening is because it's not normal. Because it doesn't belong to the person. So it's happening because it's just due to pious activities. Now they're getting the result, so something's going on. But even they're surprised, even they're amazed. Like this. So one has to distinguish in here, this fine point is that perfection and devotional service does not mean material opulence. It may be there. That's a secondary thing. Perfection means unattached to opulence. Doesn't mean it's not there. Because wherever Krishna is, then so much opulence may be there, unlimited. The same time as it may not be there. Krishna, Prabhupada points out previous purports that Krishna may do as he likes. It's not necessarily that somebody had something taken away that is specifically Krishna's mercy. It could also just be a reaction to their impious activities. They had the wealth, they were supposed to have it for a certain amount of time. That time's over, it's gone. So you don't call that's the Lord's special mercy. No, it's just It's just the modes of nature. So for the devotees, that's where we see the mercy. For the non-devotees, we're not seeing that. That's just how the modes of nature work. According to their work, they're getting the result. That's all. But for the devotee, in this case, then we may see. So Prabhupada gives the example is that a devotee may be, it says a special devotee. He may have so much qualifications that for him, preaching would be most beneficial to so many persons because of his special qualities. But somehow or another, they're just staying in a situation in which they don't involve themselves in preaching. So then Krishna may just take everything away, turn the situation in such a way that then they can't remain in that. And then they're inspired to move forward. We see this, I think it's a verse by Raghunath Das. I think it's Raghunath Das. He mentions that, I think it's Sanatana Goswami. He made me drink the poison of renunciation, like that. Prabhupada, when he took sannyas, and he quoted the same verse, that Keshav Maharaj, then, you know. Because otherwise, the nature, whatever, some situation that may not happen. So Krishna may arrange that so that then more benefit is there. So this is basically, we'll see, is that this is mainly the point in this chapter, this whole pastime. Then we see is that it is bringing out this point. The point that is there is that the devotee in this world, it doesn't always go nicely. You perform pious activities, yes, you'll get a pious result. You do impious activities, you get a bad result. That's guaranteed. But at the same time, it's because we're devotees, we should not be performing devotional service for the pious result. Because they're an impediment. We should be performing devotional service because it pleases Krishna. And if in that we get a result, some result, or something is there, then if we become proud of it, Krishna may take it away. So if we're having difficulties in the life, we're having situations in which we feel we're being deprived or oppressed or in some way bothered, generally if you check, the root is something, some problem in our own mentality, something in our own consciousness, that this then creates the situation in which we feel that difficulty. If we didn't feel the difficulty, then generally means everything is fine. You know, unless we're like the fool. The fool, of course, doesn't notice that they're in difficulty. But for the devotee, then if they find that there is a difficulty, it shouldn't be blamed on others. And it shouldn't be that it seems something's wrong with the process. Why opulence is not coming? No, opulence is an impediment. It's always an impediment. Right? Because then there's something to become attached to. So if it is not attached to it, that is special mercy of the Lord. So actually it's two separate things. You know, that opulence being there and then not being disturbed by it, that's one thing. And then the devotional service is another. Because of the devotional service, we're not disturbed by the opulence. Like that. We should always be careful that we don't put them together. Because we're so used to religion giving us prosperity. But we're talking about eternal religion. So that does give prosperity, but spiritual prosperity. Right? We want a nice situation to live in. Right? We'd like a very beautiful body. We would like good intelligence. We would like good birth. You know, we would like aristocratic friends. And we would like, you know, influence and all that. So pious activities will get you that here. Devotional service will get you that there. You can't get a more higher, more aristocratic birth than being born in Vrindavan. You can't have more intelligence or more beauty than the residents of Vrindavan. Right? You can't have more influence, right? In this world, who can you influence? You can influence somebody, even you have somebody who's emperor of the world, or even Lord Brahma, if you can influence him. Okay. But the Brajavasis, they influence the Supreme Lord. Right? So therefore, that's the result that is gotten from devotional service. So prosperity is there, but not here. May be here, may not be here, but we don't look for it here. If it's there due to previous activities and are not disturbed by it, great. If Krishna gives us something for the service like that, then fine. But that shouldn't be what we're looking for in devotional service. So that is what's being pointed out by this story. That's what makes Bali Maharaj very special, is that complete surrender. But that complete surrender means he's not interested in getting anything out of devotional service other than the pleasure of the Lord. Any questions on this or comments? Yes.
And I always distinguish when is the most basic acting upon us, or when is devotional service, the Lord, special mercy. It is appear that everyone is under the control at a certain time, and karma, in some way, unless somebody is really, really advanced. But how we can understand, make a distinction in our life, and understand this is the desire of the Lord, or this is due to my karma.
Well, for the non-devotees, it's very easy. It's due to their karma. For the, you know, very great devotees, then we know it's completely the Lord's arrangement, because there is no conditioned nature. But for those who are in between, it's a combination. But that combination is different than just its karma in devotional service. Yeah, in devotional service, there is no karma. But the reactions to karma, karma, you perform a good activity because of a mentality. You perform a bad activity because of a mentality. So the whole idea is the mentality in this material world has to be corrected. It has to be brought to Krishna consciousness. So the correction for a pious or impious or a non-devotional attitude are all the same. Right? It's the same thing. It's just like means the instruction, the moral instruction about not stealing, you know, you can tell to a karmi kid and you can tell also to a vodi child. It matches both. The mentality is wrong. Just difference is one is understanding it's Krishna's and Krishna has given this to different persons for their quota. And the other is he thinks, you know, it belongs to him and it should belong to me. But the moral point is the same. The correction is the same. So in the same way as for the devotees, the correction is the same as it would be for the karmis. But the difference is Krishna is taking care of it for the devotees, and for the karmis, then the modes of nature take care. Though Krishna may work through the modes of nature to take care, but it's he is taking that special interest. Therefore, it appears that devotees do something and they get a reaction. But actually, that reaction, it's not coming because of it's becoming because of the mentality. Krishna's arranging it. So he may give, he may not give, he may give it now, he may give it later. You know, for the karmi, they'll do something now, they'll get the reaction later. Krishna, for Krishna, he may give it later. He may give it now, he may not give it. So the idea is the devotee actually sees the Lord's hand in everything. That's the whole idea, is to establish that relationship with the Lord. So we see that it's the Lord that's taking care. If things are going nice, like you see Yudhishthira Maharaj, when Arjuna came back from Dwarka, and everything has been lost. The Yadus have already left. You know, Arjuna has failed at his mission. And then Yudhishthira is saying that, remembering that all of our, whatever, our opulence, our, you know, good family life, our influence, our wealth, everything is all due to Lord Krishna. He wants it to be there, it's there, he doesn't. So now he's left, so now without him, then what's the use in all this? So then they leave for the forest. So the whole idea is to always remember the Lord. Then, whatever situation we're in, it becomes a situation to increase our Krishna consciousness rather than distract. Because the living entity wants to enjoy, so therefore enjoyment means opulence. Right? What does Krishna enjoy? Right? Means as Atmarama, he just enjoys being himself. But when he expands that enjoyment, what does he enjoy? He enjoys opulence. Right? Because Shri means opulence. So the energy of the Lord means opulence. So when the living entity wants to take the position of Krishna, that means he wants to enjoy opulence. I mean, that's just the simple definition. So that's why we become so easily bewildered by opulence. But someone who's in the proper attitude is not bewildered because they see it's all Krishna's. They see it's Krishna's opulence. like that. Because if we can't live in opulence here, how will we live there? Because it's only opulence there also. Like that. So if we're attracted by material opulence, we'll be attracted by spiritual opulence. And we'll try to enjoy the spiritual opulence, which is not allowed. That's why we're given the illusory. You know, Ram wants to enjoy Sita. She's the spiritual personality, the consort of the Lord. But he wants to enjoy her. That's not allowed. So he gets a Maya Sita. Like that. Looks like Sita, but it's not. So the wealth here looks like wealth, but it's not. You know? Like that. So it's a the, how do you say? Is that okay? Anything else? Yeah.
Raja made the point that we have to be careful not to see Krishna consciousness as I don't know how you word it, like a give and take or a commercial exchange.
Yeah, yeah.
Where we do the devotion service and our needs are taken care of, and well being and things like that. This type of religion is very common in this world.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, I think it's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a purport where Prabhupada quotes Bhaktivinoda Thakur and describes the measure of a Vaishnava, how many books he writes, how many devotees he makes, and I think the third one was how much material energy he transforms into spiritual energy.
Yeah, it would probably would say how many temples he's opened.
So, and then we see, you know, the like Rupa and Sanat Goswami, when they were in Vrindavan, you know, they got the message from Lord Chaitanya to recover the Tirthas. But, you know, they established these enormous temples, you know, that defy the imagination of modern engineers, how they were actually done. You see, like the pyramids, you know, where these blocks come from, how they get there. So similarly, you know, they're like the Ramananda and Deer, you know, they don't know how this was done. You know, I've heard this discussed, you know, amongst construction, how they got these huge blocks way up in the top. So it does seem that there's some parallel between the strength of one's devotion to Krishna and his ability to utilize assets in Krishna's service. And then we see with Srila Prabhupada, the Vairagya to the nth degree. I wonder if you could comment, you know, on there is some connection, you know, but it's not exactly a fruit of fact.
I mean, it's just, you'll see, if someone is very expert at making devotees, or raising funds, or preaching, or you know, inspiring devotees, it should be understood that that's something spiritual. Because material opulence doesn't work in Krishna consciousness. It doesn't make Krishna conscious. It can be used. Someone can take material wealth and use it for Krishna, and that's their glory. But material wealth doesn't make Krishna consciousness. Like that. You see, so many wealthy people, they're not Krishna conscious. They come in contact with us. And nothing comes of their money except for pride. But we see others, then they're able to do great things with that wealth. But now there's always the aspect that they may become proud, you know, until one comes to a very, you know, pure state, one may become proud. So we have to be careful to distinguish that it's the pride that has to go, not the opulence or the service. Sometimes we see that, is that somebody is very good at something, let's say they can make so many devotees, they're very influential, they can go into a place where no one's inspired and make them inspired. So, but at the same time, they may be proud of that. So now the correct measure would be to figure out how to get rid of the pride, not to stop the service of making devotees. But if we see the history, Prabhupada did the first one, and the contemporary application is the second. Anyone's influential, but there's some problem in their character, then their service is stopped. And that's seen as a progress. The problem we would see is that someone who is a manager, if they would do something wrong, he put them right back into management. Like that. Because that was their ability that they could do for Krishna. So many times we see. Or they were, whatever they were preachers or whatever it is, and then they got into Maya, then Prabhupada would call them and then put them right back where they were. And then if they could, in that humbled state, if they could then progress, they'd become more successful. If they'd become proud again, of course, then they would go off again. But that's a fine thing to distinguish is between, is the opulence isn't the problem. It's the attachment to it or the pride coming from it. So if it matches the service, matches the situation, then it shouldn't be seen as something wrong. It's you have to correct what's wrong. Prabhupada says if the eye has a cataract, you take the cataract off, leave the eye. You know? Of course, the simplest, most pragmatic, you know, is just get rid of the eye. You've got rid of the cataract. But it also then it creates other problems. So generally that's, you know, when it's not as well thought out, you know, then these problems come up. So one has to be very, very thoughtful to be able to see what would be a solution. The solution will be Krishna conscious. The person's proud, so what do they need? They need Krishna conscious instruction or Krishna conscious association, not just being removed from that category of service. It may be that this situation creates a problem, so they'll do the same kind of service somewhere else where they may get better association, or something may improve the situation to help correct it, may create some humility, something. But it has to be seen from that, rather than it's a problem, just remove. And then there's nothing. You know, because Krishna has given him that quality, so then Krishna wants it to happen. You know, who it's going to happen through, that we don't know. That's the thing. So we see. Does that make any sense? So it's a fine point. So the opulence isn't really the problem, because we have so much opulence. And that was always a complaint by other mats. Why so much opulence? Materialism. It's not materialism. It's used for Krishna. You know? Okay. It's used for Krishna. But others would just see it as material opulence. You know? But in the material world, you won't get something that doesn't look like material opulence. Right? Means even Dwarka looked like some other place. Sita looked like one of the local ladies. Otherwise, why would Ravana take her? Right? It's not that it's something different. There's sometimes the idea that the spiritual should be the opposite. It is in one sense, but in another, what it looks like is not the same. Like the fruit on the tree reflected in the water and the real fruit look the same. But the quality of it is totally different. But we have a tendency, that's impersonalism, is that we expect it to look different. So if here, you know, people have a form, then spiritual means no form. Or it should be something totally different. You know, we walk on our feet, so there they should walk on their hands. It should be something totally different, so you feel that something dynamic is change or something different is there. You know, but it's, so it's a very fine point to be able to engage the opulence, because that's our disease. We want to engage the opulence for ourselves, or, you know, take a cut. So when that's there, that mentality has to be adjusted. Like that.
It's really kind of two mentalities. Either artificially renouncing it or artificially enjoying it.
Yeah.
So you fall either way.
Yeah, it's a razor's edge. Artificially enjoying is the sahajya, or the, you know, just the karmi. And renunciation, artificial, that's the jnani. They artificially renounce, it's not theirs anyway. The karmi is artificially enjoying, it's not theirs anyway. So the path down the middle. So that's the thing. If you want to correct something, if you have a pendulum and you want to stop its swing and it's on one side and you catch it, you can't correct it by throwing it the other way. By law of physics, it can't be. You have to take it and very carefully pull it to the middle, see that it's in the middle, and then carefully let go. Then you'll see it'll stay and not move at all. But the common thing is it goes there, you catch it, throw it the other way, and then it just goes this way. And then it goes, wow, that's crazy, grab it, throw it the other way. Oh, that's worse than before. You know, it's that saying, it was better when it was worse. You know? You know? So one has to be careful of that, because it's thoughtfulness that'll correct like that. But, you know, passion means you want something immediate. And some things you can correct, but the disease actually doesn't go away. You know, by getting rid of the symptom, you haven't cured the disease. You have to cure the root. So that takes more care. You know, though there may be need, if it's acute, you have to deal with the symptom. But that means still you have to deal with the root along with it. Or if it's not so acute, then you just deal with the root and you'll find it'll go away. Like that. that okay?
Krishna says, after all those who have achieved perfection, hardly one was completed. So, as we keep our sadhana and everything going with this process, like we see almost all the sampradayas, like Sri or Ramana, it's like everybody is like, struggling, and very few make it, like, even after being so many. So does it mean that the consciousness is disturbed with some of the modes? Is it even after being so long, chanting or?
Yeah, she's consciousness is what has to adjust. You adjust the consciousness, everything else is adjusted. Basically speaking, you adjust the consciousness, there is no material world. Material world is basically a figment of our imagination. We think that, for us, the material world is a place where we can enjoy. It's ours. The place exists, but it's not ours. So what we think of it is not, you know, it's like if we walk into a bank. We just walk into a bank, and then we have this idea, whatever's in the bank is ours. We can just go to the vault, take the money we like, you know, sit down in nice marble, you know, nice hall there, you know, bring our friends and have a party. But it's not. There's another purpose. It's not that the bank's not there. So the material world exists, but what we think it is, that's what's illusion. So the difficulty then comes is that perfection means that we have freed ourselves from the material contamination, but that we haven't attained spiritual perfection. Means you'll see there's a difference in these terms. Perfection simply means liberation. But when he probably says spiritual perfection, that means then relationship with Krishna. That's why then so many who have attained perfection, they don't know Krishna. They've come to the Brahman platform, but they don't know who Krishna is. So within devotional service, then it takes some time to correct the consciousness. You correct the consciousness, then the desires change. Because you'll see, you're working on something, oh, this is not good, I shouldn't do this. So that's the intelligence saying it shouldn't be done. And because we're following Buddhi Yoga, then we acknowledge it and we try to do it consciously. But sometimes if we dig a little bit and really take that path of seeing what that is, do I want that? You'll find when you get right down to the bottom, there'll be a very loud yes. So that's the problem. And that's based on the consciousness. And the consciousness wants to enjoy, and we, due to our conditioning over many lifetimes, have decided that this particular thing is how I will enjoy. You know? Like this. So it may be ingrained very deeply. We may have been doing it for many, many lifetimes or desiring it for many, many lifetimes. You know? So that's the thing, is then you have to address that, is then, well, what's the use of it? But one has to both be careful with this, but at the same time it's necessary. So one has to actually address, come face to face with one's material desires, and decide, I don't want this. Which is maybe difficult. It may be scary. You know, because we tend to just think, I chant and everything's nice. We try to just gloss over. You know, we've swept the room, put it under the rug. But we have to get rid of it. Or we've taken all the garbage, stuck it in the closet. But why is it in the closet? Because we still want it. Right? If it was garbage, we would have thrown it out. But it's cluttering up, it's making a mess, it doesn't belong there, but we want it. So we put it in the closet. So we've cleaned up, you know, we follow the principles, we do this and that, but there's so many desires we just stick into the closet. So anartha nivmriti means, you know, having a look at what's there and saying, I don't want this. So that's it's a serious step in Krishna consciousness. So if one can take that, then one sees the advancement is quicker. Because that's the whole thing, is you can't know Krishna when you know the material energy. How much you pulled away from the material energy, that much you can know Krishna. Like that. So it's a necessary aspect. But
okay, so we say chitra dharmana marja, right? Cleansing process.
Yeah.
By chanting.
Yes.
So an example goes on chanting for 10 years. 15 years, 20 years, say like 20 or 30 years, some sort of thing should happen.
Yeah, it's happening.
It's happening.
It's happening means the dirt is going. It means somebody means, see, you have layers of dirt. You have what is, let's say, the attachments of this life. We have the attachments of previous lives. Then we have the attachment of just trying to be God, to be the enjoyer, just the principle of it. So you have to get past the thing of this life. Okay, I had an attachment for some particular, you know, activity or food. With habit, we get rid of that. But to enjoy in that kind of way, that's then from longer, right? Let's say it's a particular thing to eat. So we get over that, but we still have attachment to eating, right? Then you have to get over the attachment to that, that we're honoring the Lord's Prasad. So it goes in stages. So therefore it may look like it's the same thing. Oh, I haven't progressed. But you have to check what's the level that they're dealing with. You know? Many times you see advanced devotees, they can run into a problem, they may fall away. And we say, well, what's the difference between them and a neophyte devotee? Many times you check, what they're dealing with is a higher level of, the deeper level of anartha. They're trying to get out. It means, you know, it's like they've gotten rid of so many things, but there's something deeper that's there. They're working, getting closer to the principle of just, I'm the enjoyer. So it may take some time. So therefore, the process is deeper and deeper. Like that. Yes?
You're speaking about anarcha-nibbity, so what happens if you see anartha in yourself, you know it's an anartha, but then you know by jnana it's an anartha.
Yeah.
Okay, you know by jnana, you know this is against principle. But then when you ask yourself honestly, like in a really honest way, do I want this thing? And the answer comes up all the time, yes, I do.
Yeah.
I really want this thing. I really want this thing. Then there's a thing you go through, well, what is it, you know, the flaws of thy own self be true. You know, in other words, you know, what happens when you find that you have something inside yourself, you know it's an anartha, but it's still the same time, like almost it seems like every part of your being is saying, oh, you should. You want that thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So,
by GAN, you know it's not.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you really inspect down into your being, you say, gee, I actually really want that.
Yeah. That's why I said that the intelligence is closer to the soul. Because then from the intelligence, that's actually the key. That's the Gita is then giving us this process, buddhi yoga, is that you start from that. You know it's wrong. And by intellectually looking at it and seeing examples of others who have done it and been successful or those who have opposed it and have come into difficulty, then one does it. So that's called sadhana. But then we find that we, you know, we find we really want this thing, though we know it's wrong. So the first thing is that we should acknowledge that it is wrong, though we may want it. We shouldn't rationalize that it's okay. We should just say, yes, it's nonsense, it's wrong. It's against devotional service, it's against my advancement. Against devotional service means against my progress. So then we have to see is, okay, now can I get rid of this by, you know, some basic, by being more careful in my devotional service, contemplating it more, or taking advice from others, or prayer to Krishna, because it's actually Krishna who will take these things away. Means we can recognize them that they're there, want them to go away. Krishna will take them away. We can't get rid of them. But we have to want to get rid of them. So at least even then, theoretically, we should want to get rid of it. That will start the process. But if we rationalize it, that it's okay and everybody's doing it, or, you know, it's the modern situation, or being practical, then it will just stay and it may even deepen. But if we theoretically want to get rid of it, though we can't, then that'll start. Krishna will start working on it. Because he'll only work on things that you really want him to work on. You know, that's why only devotees, he takes things away that way, because they want to surrender. So therefore, then he will, you say, I want to surrender, so then those areas that are getting in the way of surrender, he may take things away and create that atmosphere. Right? So then, yeah, then if it's not going away, you know, quite, you know, nicely, in any case, since we're dealing with it and it's something we need, then we should see what is Krishna's direction on dealing with that. What it is that it should be done with it. What is the standard for that? Because there's a standard for every aspect of material life. You know, and that's what in the material world we call piety or dharma. Is then we see what that, and if it can be engaged. But if we find it's an aspect impiety, then we have a problem. But if it's an attachment to something pious, you know, very attached to the family or some wealth or some education or, you know, things that are considered, you know, glorious in this world, then we see, how does Krishna want me to deal in the family or with the wife or with the child or with my money or with my position or with, you know, like this? And then try to mold towards that, because then by engaging it in Krishna's service, then it will be purified. Then the attachment will start to be loosened. Then we may be able to get on top of it and get rid of the attachment. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
Yes.
How do we comprehend the position of the disciple who is not supposed to find force in his guru, but still it may happen that, as you were mentioning, some senior Vaishnava is going through a special purification and on a deep level, and some anattas are manifesting. And the disciple is not supposed to see for a serious book. So how do we reconcile?
Well, the first thing is the key you mentioned, is, are the karmis going through that? Are the normal devotees going through that? You said, means the normal devotee is the Lord, means the more advanced, the more deep the one the dealings are, and the more involved Krishna is. So we have to be careful to see that our view, we're not seeing from our vantage point. So we have to look from the vantage point of scriptures and other senior devotees. So Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Because otherwise we can mistake something, you know? Like we see. I'm not saying that something's not wrong, but I'm saying is that there is the point that we can mistake. Shishupal, he had unlimited bad things to say about Krishna. You know, it's like, who is this guy? Doesn't even follow Varnashram, right? He's born in a Kshatriya family. Next, he disappears, doesn't even do anything with his parents, goes out, stays in some village as a cowherd boy. You know? And then, from there, then he comes back into the city, and, you know, he's been living as a citizen under the protection of Kamsa. He comes in and kills Kamsa. Right? He's the king. It's sinful to kill the king. You know, he's one's protector. Then now suddenly he's the king, you know, and then he's driving Arjuna's chariot, you know, and doing stuff like that. He's driven before. This wasn't the first time when the thing with Agni, he also, that Kandava forest, he also drove the chariot. So he does that like a Shudra, you know, and he sits around and talks philosophy like a big Brahmin. So who is this guy? He doesn't follow anything. Right? So, seemingly it looks like that, but the thing is, because of the higher level, it's not that at all. It's not that at all. Though it may, externally, the situation may look the same. You know? Just like if you have an apple that's not offered to Krishna, an apple that is offered to Krishna, they look pretty much the same. The botanist will still say it's an apple. Right? But it's not a regular apple. It depends what you call them. You have to define what's a major mistake.
That's being given some wealth and seemingly misusing it or wasting it because of not knowing how to handle it, like considering the circumstances.
Yeah, okay, so then, now wealth belongs to who? Yeah, so then, and how does one get wealth? By one's own endeavor or Krishna's giving? So if Krishna wants to give a whole bunch and then somebody doesn't deal with it, then and then there's a problem from that, then Krishna may be using that as a medium to teach that devotee something. So for Krishna, it's no great thing. Like you was mentioning about Govindaji temple. Like that Man Singh had a huge amount of wealth and wanted to engage in Rupa Goswami's service. He built this huge temple. Huge. I mean, it's today, it's, you could easily say it's one of the wonders of the world in, you know, architecture and engineering and like this. Rupa Goswami never saw it finished. Govindaji doesn't even stay there. Right? So to Krishna, it's no big deal. So much wealth comes, so much goes. Dwarka, the opulence is immense, and then it just disappears. Right? So for Krishna, the actual thing is the exchange between the two. So it's not the wealth coming or going, it's what is the mentality of the person who's dealing with that wealth that Krishna is giving them. So if in that, that person is, you know, becoming Krishna conscious, becoming this, or surrendering. Because here, Bali Maharaj, you got the whole world, and then it wasn't supposed to be used how he was going to use it. The demons aren't supposed to live up there. Right? It's supposed to be the demigods. So we see situations may arise. Akrura also got it all entangled in that Shamantaka jewel thing. And then Krishna just gave him entangle it, you take care of the jewel. You know? So it's a very subtle thing when it's there. That's why we see many times when we see Prabhupada's dealings with situations and devotees, you never really knew what was the reaction going to be. You think in some reaction, oh, he'll be very kind, he was very heavy. And others where you'd think he would be very heavy, he was very exceedingly kind. You know, like once he went to I think in Sweden. He went to Sweden. Sweden is very highly, if I remember right, this country, I think it was Sweden, they're very highly sensitive to equality, social equality. So any kind of social differences, you know, and somebody taking that position, they're very sensitive to. So Prabhupada goes to this, to the end of all the people that are most reactive. It's college students, right? University students. People older than that, they may have their opinions and they'll work more slowly. Younger than that, they don't know. So they're the most reactive, most vocal, most violent, most everything. Prabhupada goes to that university there, and it's a very political university. And what does he give a lecture on? Varnashram, four classes of man. First class man, second class man, third class man, fourth class man. And he gives a very heavy lecture. Right? Then at the end of the lecture, then, you know, somebody raises a hand and shouts out from the back, and what kind of man are you? And so then Prabhupada becomes very humble, lowers his head, and he says, I am fifth class, the servant of all the other four. Wow. Completely changed the whole thing. So whatever he said was bought. So the spiritual platform is very different many times in how we perceive it. So what's between Krishna and the particular devotee, especially the senior devotees, then if we feel there's a problem, if we can deal with it, we deal. If we can't, we can try going to someone else who may have some influence. And if not, we leave it between Krishna and them. Because Krishna, we see Bali Maharaj, he's not going to let, and once someone's taken up devotional service, Krishna's not going to let them get away. So, for it's bad. It's Krishna's opulence. Why it should be wasted. But at the same time, is Krishna's not attached to the opulence. We have to see that we're not attached. Because there may be so many faults. Why we're seeing that fault? You know? Why we're seeing that? Because we may have an attachment for wealth. You know? Attachment or an aversion. Whatever state we're at. So because of that, we may see that one in Narta. But there may be some other. Someone else is pointing out another Narta. They don't even notice that one. You know what I'm saying? So there's all these things are at play at once. Krishna's dealing with them, you know, our position, the social thing, their influence, but ours. So we have to be very careful and judge the whole thing. Doesn't mean action's not taken. That's also useless. That's ignorance. But action should be in goodness or transcendence. Passion is never useful. Because you see, you take the money away from that person, the money won't be there anymore. That money came for that person. You see so many times, somebody has money, they take it away. Communists, right? They had, there was so much wealth was there, they go take all the stuff, whatever the Vaishyas had, kill all the Vaishyas and that, and put it all, take it all away to their capital, and then did they have any money? No, they had no money. They're poor. The money came for that person. Like that. So therefore, it's taken, it won't go somewhere else. That's the thing. It's not this idea. It means that's a separate point. Is that there's no scarcity. There's unlimited opulence, you know, here. So whatever Krishna wants to give somebody, that's there. It doesn't. It won't affect someone else. Not because this person has the money, therefore no one else has. Like that, which is many times a mentality. I'm not saying that this is part of. This is just a side issue that came up since it was touched on. We have to be careful. Is that there's no shortage? If we're supposed to have it, it'll be there. If we're not supposed to have it, it won't be there. Because I've seen so many times myself, very wealthy devotees, great amounts of money. People complain why they have the money that could be distributed amongst so many, and it's taken. It's gone. Nobody has anything. Neither the person who arranged it, neither the person it's given to. You can give $1 million today to a beggar in Calcutta. You can come back tomorrow and they'll be back on the street. And you can give 100 rupees to a wealthy man. You can come back tomorrow and that's already doubled or tripled or 1,000 times. So therefore, we have to see material nature is working actually different than what we think it is. And then you add into that Krishna consciousness and Krishna. The Krishna, you know, element. So therefore, it's not good because these are given as services to do and the result is for Krishna. So therefore one always acts to get a good result for Krishna. And a good, you know, yeah, a good result for Krishna. So if it's not coming, then it's not considered good. But at the same time is one has to see other aspects that are working within that. So one has to be careful. Is that okay?
Like,
Guru
Bhagavad is a very serious mantra. Yeah. Can Krishna arrange circumstances in such a way that a great number of disciples or even one disciple may criticize the doing for something that he's doing, and in order to teach something, but. May Krishna not consider the offenses so much in such circumstances, which is arranging himself. You know what I mean? If it's meant to teach something to those who criticize or.
It means me, who are you talking about? The person that's having the problem or the others who are
no,
experiencing, you know?
No, let's say a guru is put in a situation whereby Krishna, and he will fail in his attempts. Lakshmi will be so-called wasted. Disciples may become bewildered and not be able to perform their service, their sadhana properly. And thereby, criticism will arise from all sides. And can Krishna arrange this to happen in order to teach something to a great number of people and himself not taken too much into consideration or criticism because he has been arranging himself? Is that possible?
People are responsible for their actions. So if you criticize Vaishnavas, you know, rightly or wrongly, the reaction is there. That's why we see is you criticize the activity, not the person. So you don't necessarily need to even refer to the person. You just refer to a certain situation. Second thing is that just in this, then Krishna tests why you've come to Krishna consciousness. Did you come to Krishna consciousness to work under a person who is very expert at managing money? So So if they're not expert at managing money and that will make you give up performance of devotional service, then it wasn't a very sincere attempt. Maya's job is very easy. Right? That's one thing we have to see is because of basically the modern scenario, I mean the material world is in general like that, but especially the sensitivity, because in the material world the tendency is, if it's a, you know, how you say, in a more old-fashioned society, there's respect for authority. Though there's a sensitivity to anything that goes wrong. In the modern context, there's not really any respect for authority. So any chance to show that authority is not good or doesn't need to be followed is immediately accepted. So if all Maya has to do is catch one senior devotee and do something with them, and thousands of devotees will bloop. It's like a you know, what do you call it? It's just a, I don't know what the, Yeah, it's just this very simple thing. You know, it's like a, what do you call it? A cakewalk or something? It's just like, it's so simple. And then, what is the determination of those devotees? That's it. That's all it takes. It means they were just waiting for an opportunity to go out into Maya. But they couldn't think up a good enough excuse because, you know, they've been trained and their intelligence is telling them it's not good. And then this comes along and bang, well, he's doing it, I'll do it. But since when does he's doing it give a good spiritual result or even a good material result? So why should it give you? So it's a false, faulty logic, but it's very happily accepted because the person was looking for a way to get into Maya but didn't have a good excuse. This is very generalistic, but we do see it works like that. You know? It's always someone else. But the thing is Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the spiritual life means going up to the door of self-realization yourself and you with your own hand knocking on the door. It doesn't say that, you know, if everybody else knocks, then, you know, you don't even have to bother knocking. You know, it's already done for you. No, you have to do it yourself. You yourself have to want to go back to Godhead. You yourself have to be determined. Bali Maharaj, what happened to his guru? He could just have said, well, my guru, you know, wasn't in Krishna consciousness, so why should I? No, he continued. And you'll see later, after this, then Vamana is going to ask Sukracharya what was wrong there. And you'll see Sukracharya will say everything was perfect. Right? So you can see, he had some problem. There was some attachment for that if Bali Maharaj has no money, and I'm his priest, then that means he's not going to give me any money. But he can see beyond that, because he's a very elevated Brahmin. So when you ask, you know, when it comes down to the nitty-gritty, he knows this is correct, and he follows. And he's respected by Vamanadeva for his opinion. Like that. So one has to be very, very careful in seeing these things, that we don't, our own excuses we're looking for, then find them in someone else, and then say, see, and then just do what we want. We have to be very, very careful. Like that. Is that okay? So we'll end here. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jayanita Gaura Premanam.